Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
You're about to listen to Bananas for Bonanza, episode 31. This is Andy Daly. Here on this free feed, I'll be re-releasing all of the back episodes of Bananas for Bonanza, one every other week. If you want to hear new episodes ad-free, please subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/AndyDaly. The entire Bananas for Bonanza archive is also waiting for you there, and you can access lots and lots of bonus content. So do that. Okay, thank you. Enjoy.
Yeah! Bonanza, it's the finest show alive. So consult your TV guide, get your great outdoors inside. Take some Ponderosa pride and forever may it ride. I'm Bananas for Bananas.
Fantastic. I'm going to start with the yee-haw. Hey, yee-haw! Whoa, that was a big one. What'd you fire off there? It's echoing through the canyon, didn't it?
That's right. That was a tiny little .22 caliber, but the canyon was big.
The canyon was
real
big.
Oh, you can hear Ducky.
That's Ducky's got a lot to say today, goodness.
Yeah, Ducky just started crawling.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah.
For serious?
3 days ago.
Uh-oh.
She is a Roomba, let me tell you.
Just sweeping up all the cat hairs and whatnot.
Every corner of the house.
Oh, well, good for her. All right, well, hey, it's Bananas for Bonanza. And hello, friend. Come on in. The gate is open wide. Welcome to Bananas for Bonanza. I'm Dalton Wilcox. I'm your host. I'm here with Mutt Taylor, who you heard from a moment ago.
Howdy.
And Amy Sleverson.
I'm Christian. I'm entrepreneur, though. I'm not sure if I can say that about myself after watching this episode.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, I just feel like the rock of my belief system has been moved around or something that I've been shattered.
I'm shattered. Yeah, I mean, you've been a Christian as long as we've known you and probably longer.
Well, and not only that, but in sales. I don't know which way is up anymore.
Oh, my God.
Wait, so you're not only questioning your faith, but also commerce and sales?
Well, if witches turn into wolves and compassion is in the eyes of the beholder, maybe God is a construct and sales goals are arbitrary and without meaning.
Oh, my God.
You lost me. You
stop.
Lost me.
Yeah. If you can't believe, how can we believe?
Oh, this is shocking. This is real shocking. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this episode. And then I want to, because it obviously had a major effect on Amy Sleverson.
And it must have you too with werewolf ladies.
Believe me, I said, finally, they're talking about real issues on this this program, such as werewolfism. But yes, this episode has everything. It has a constantly repeated slur. It has one of the best brawls I've ever seen on any television show involving a whip, no less. It has incantations and magic and all kinds of, you name it, it's got it.
Glassware.
Very important, plot-important glassware.
Tons and tons of facial bronzer.
An enormous amount of lip gloss.
And a type of language ethnicity that's called enunciation.
Yeah. Enunciation.
Don't use contractions and you are an other.
This episode is called The Dark Star. It is episode 31, season 1 of Bonanza, which I think I previously might have thought was the last episode of the season. It is not. There's one more to go. They only make 32 per season. Wow. Well...
Wow. How did they dare? How did they get by?
Sons of bitches. And this episode concerns, it turns out, so I looked up, here's specifically what I did. There's a moment in this episode where these people, they're a traveling band of peoples, and they serve as a delicacy milk mixed with the blood of an unborn calf as a delicacy. And so I went online and I said, did they really do that? This group of people? And I typed in what they're called in this episode. And all I heard was, don't call them that. And I never did get an answer about the blood of the calf. Oh. But anyways, we're meant to call them Romas or Romanis.
Yeah.
Not as they're called in this episode. I'm going to go ahead and say it the one time. Gypsies. And that word is repeated a million times in this episode.
It sure is.
And apparently, by the way, the reason they called them that is that people thought they was from Egypt. You know the way we call people from Egypt that.
Is it short for like gypped?
Yeah.
Egypt.
Exactly.
Gypsies.
Isn't that interesting?
Wow. We said we wouldn't say it again, but I said
it. It's not so much interesting as it is confusing what's right and what's wrong.
Oh, no. I'm telling you, things do get confusing on this show when they grapple with real topics. So we are going to talk heavily about the Romani peoples and how they come across in this episode. I think it's a pretty flattering depiction and all kinds of things. But I do want to talk a little bit about what was going on the original air date of this episode.
Please.
Now, because this is a big one. You're not going to believe it. April 23rd, 1960. On this date, British cryptozoologist and self-employed insurance salesman Tim Dinsdale captured what many believe to be the only film of the Loch Ness Monster.
Whoa. In his bathtub.
In his bathtub. No. Oh. He was at the goddamn Loch Ness. And you see, you can find this footage, Tim Dinsdale's footage. Oh, yeah, it looks like it could be a boat or any number of other things. But I believe it was a Loch Ness Monster.
Hey, you ever come across a Nessie?
Certainly I have. I went looking for one and I found him in a gift shop in a town called Drumnadrocket, Scotland. And he was trying to sell me a goddamn keychain for $4.95. Right. He's a shapeshifter and can become a sea monster or a man. And matter of fact, I encountered several of them while I was up there and took care of every damn one of them. Now they don't have no Loch Ness Monsters up there anymore, as far as I know.
Okay.
So you're welcome, Scotland. So that was a big day for monsters. And then on the Billboard charts, I looked up the number one song in the country.
Oh. I'm on Tenterhooks.
And it was.
What?
The Theme from A Summer Place by Percy Faith.
Wow, thank God.
That's crazy.
Now, however, whilst looking that up, I says to myself, hang on a goddamn minute. Was they not tracking country music songs at this time?
Hymns?
Hymns, too, I could look up. Well, so this time I says to myself, I'm going to look up what was number one on the country music chart, goddammit. Why do I care what's number one on the blah, blah, blah chart, whatever chart this is?
Right.
And so I went and I did it, and Brett, stop playing that goddamn theme from A Summer Place. Thank you very much. The number one song on the country music charts as in April 23rd, 1960, was He'll Have to Go by Jim Reeves. Do you know this song?
Yes.
It's the one that starts, put your sweet lips a little closer to the phone.
Put your sweet lips.
And Brett's playing it right now. Now we're going to run into a similar problem because it was number one on the country charts from February 8th to May 9th.
Oh, well, now if they're both on the country, both on the top of the charts, Brett, just play a little of both of them together.
At the same time?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
In a mashup.
Yeah. That's a nice mashup. Now, This song, if you're not familiar with it out there, here's what happens in this song. A man is calling on the telephone from a place where there's a jukebox. And he gets his woman on the phone.
Uh-huh.
But he can overhear in the background, there's another man there.
Oh, my God.
It could be anyone.
Wait, the jukebox is where he is or where she is?
He's where a jukebox
is. Is it a party line?
I don't believe... No. Oh, good question. The song doesn't address that question.
I think it should.
The song makes it sound like it's point to point.
Okay.
Person to person phone call. And there's another person in the room, and he says, the course of the song is, that other fellow that's there with you, he'll have to go.
Oh.
Even if it's her adopted son?
He doesn't seem to care.
What if it's her clergyman?
Either way.
Or an honored guest.
Jim Reeves is very clear, you
Maytag catch. Maytag repairman. Maybe the washer's overflowing.
Could be. But Jim Reeves isn't asking questions. He is simply saying he'll have to go.
I see.
Okay? Wherever he is, he's laying down the goddamn law. And I think of it as romantically menacing. Because there's
just one more thought.
Uh-huh.
What if there's been a break-in and that man is a police officer sworn to protect her?
Okay, sure. He's there just to take a sworn statement about a break-in and entrance situation or something like that.
He'll have to
go. Or it's another country singer, but on the radio being interviewed.
Or on that jukebox that he's with, he just thinks it's on the other end when in fact it's George Jones.
See, there's all kinds of possible situations.
Could she be a voiceover actress?
Oh, there's
and
that.
And she's just playing her reel in the back?
What if she's possessed and doing a Reagan from Exorcist?
So she's speaking with multiple tongues.
Right.
So it's the voice of a demon in there. Well, then all the more he has to go.
You know, they've talked about how some people can get a radio station on their teeth fillings.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe she's just get some fella talking the news.
That would be a constant problem for this woman to talk on the phone. If every time she gets on the phone, there's other voices coming from her fillings.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be bad. She'd never hold down a relationship. No. The suspicion would kill everyone. But Jim Reeves is very clear. He's not asking any questions. He don't want to know who it is or what they're there for or what's going on. He says he'll have to go. And then, now, this was very popular. This was such a popular song that, in fact, a woman by the name of Jean Black, the following year, recorded a response song that went to number two itself, and it was called He'll Have to Stay.
Oh, my God.
Yes, sir. Now, here's what is communicating He'll Have to Stay. It's her saying, hey, where are you? With that jukebox in the background, I can hear you're at a bar with your friends or something like that. Number one. Number two, you stood me up last night. And so you're damn right out there. There's somebody else here, and I like him a lot, and he'll have to stay.
That's right.
This is a sassy and a lippy song, a mouthy song.
Brett, I hope
there's a new movement at my church, and it's for poly relationships within. So my husband and I have taken on a secondary.
Oh, secondary what?
Oh, well, relationship with another couple, and we're not sure who's supposed to pair off with who, but we've just had dinner a couple of times and they seem nice.
And you're not picking up a vibe either way as to whether he's more the other husband is more interested in you or your husband? You can't quite tell.
No, we're gonna, the whole thing of poly relationships is just to do a lot of communicating and a lot of talking to be clear about what the relationships are, and then you know, so that everybody's on the same page, and then once you do that, and it takes 3 to 6 months,
then you can
kiss a leg, or
so that's where you start.
The first thing you kiss is one of the legs.
Well, that's what I would go for.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Do you have any fancy if you find yourself leaning towards one of them in particular?
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't want to tell my husband because it's part of the, you know, I don't want to feel like disloyal.
Yeah.
But then I know this is a new practice in our church, and so I want to be a good participant. But we're... We're just finding. We're just. This is in discovery. We're in discovery.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, you're going to have to keep us updated as to how it goes there.
Please do.
I'm concerned. I have some concerns.
I have some interest. I'm surprised to hear that
a polyamorous relationship has so much to do with communication.
It's all paperwork.
A lot of it is contractual, and then
everything is written down and it's notarized.
But that's a type of just prolonged foreplay that could really get my rocks tumbling.
There's a lot of frisson in wax. What is that?
The wax seal.
Yeah,
and everything notarized.
Thumbprints and all that. Thumbprints are very sexy. Yeah. Thumbprints in a book. Yeah, I tell you what.
Then you know what can fit in different crevices.
Sure you do.
I don't even know much about it. I just want to be supportive to my husband because it was, you know, he's the one who wanted to look out and just, it's not that he doesn't want to be with me. It's that he wants to have other experiences so that he appreciates being with me.
Oh, that's a good way for him to have put it.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, it's like you like it. You like pot roast, but you gotta have a terrible triangle sandwich at the truck stop to make you appreciate the pot roast.
That's exactly right.
I never thought of that. That is a sign of low quality of a sandwich when they cut it in a triangle. Why is that? How come you know as soon as you see a triangle sandwich that you're in trouble? That meat's gone bad? I wonder. Well, that's something we can look into. All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck with that. What do you know about them? Is there biographical details? Do anything for a living or anything like that?
Yeah. Oh, for our couple?
Yeah, your new couple.
Our new couple is one's an urban farmer.
Oh.
And he's nice, and he likes to. He says you can make arugula grow anywhere. And then I
liar.
Said, "Well, that's what I." I said, "I think this guy is trying to sell me a bill of goods." And the wife is a pilot.
A pilot of airplanes?
Yeah, she's a jet fighter.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that something?
Doesn't that do anything for you?
Yeah. I thought she's got good eyesight, that's for sure. You know, she can see us coming. I mean, if we were going to meet in an area that was, you know, an open air mall.
Yeah. If you was obscured by clouds, she'd have some ideas to whether you were there. She'd consult her instruments.
Or obscured by a banana republic or something.
Yeah, right. Precisely. Yeah. Well, okay. That's great. Now, so what did we do? We covered that. That night, April 23rd, 1960, at the Grand Ole Opry, you did have Jim Reeves there singing his classic song.
Kidding.
And Chet Atkins come on stage during the performance to present Jim Reeves with his gold record for He'll Have to Go.
Wow.
Yep. It was a big night for those folks. And then, hey, we got a new big hot movie of the week.
No More Ben-Hur.
No More Ben-Hur. The number one movie this week was Please Don't Eat the Daisies. You ever hear of that movie?
Yeah. That's Rock Hudson. Doris Day.
Sounds
good. Am I making that up?
No, it sounds about right. They move up to the country from the city and they have all kinds of problems and a dog and God knows what. And it was partly inspired the Brady Bunch from what I understand. What are you looking up? You're looking up who's in that movie?
Yeah, but it was Doris Day. Oh, it's David Niven. I have seen this. But was it also not Yours, Mine, and Ours that inspired the Brady Bunch, too?
Okay.
Yeah, fuck it.
Yep, fuck it is right. We got some good celebrity birthdays, finally.
Wow.
Steve Clark, the English rock guitarist of a band called Def Leppard, was born on April 23rd, 1960.
Savage Steve Clark.
He was Steve something Clark. Now you got to look that up.
Okay, but isn't he the one that passed away?
He did. He died of, what happened was he got so drunk that he broke some ribs, and they put him on painkillers, and then he got so drunk that he couldn't breathe. And so that was the end of that fellow there. But he had a bad nickname. There was another guy in the band named Savage, Savage. But Steve Clark.
Well, you're not thinking of. And then they took on an American to replace this guy whose first name was Vivian.
Oh, Vivian.
Yeah.
ridiculous. An American named Vivian.
How do you know that after watching this episode that everyone doesn't just die of evil?
Everyone. Certainly not the Kirkreds.
Well, now that I realize all their mothers died, doesn't it mean that the three boys are evil?
Oh, and that shit.
They have never consummated any sort of romantic relationships with women. So could they be eunuchs? Eunuchs? Like, because I just don't know what to believe anymore.
Oh, Lord, this is a profound crisis of faith. Amy Sleverson is considering the possibility that the Cartwright boys is witches and eunuchs.
Well, now, last time, that guest was Chad was saying they was incels. So maybe that's why they're incels, because them's eunuchs.
It would certainly explain Hoss. Because he's so big and strong, right? Isn't that a eunuch supposed to get strong? Well, I don't know why that is.
Yeah, it seems
but
like
But little
the other
Joe,
way.
Little Joe, he fell in love, but he couldn't seal the deal.
Oh, no, right. He sure couldn't, but he could have. We'll talk about that. There's a way he could have. But what do you learn over there about Steve?
Rick Savage, you are right, my friend. Rick Savage was the bassist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Steve had a bad nickname. I forget what it was.
Yeah, I can't
something
find
dumb.
That. I'll keep looking.
Nah, it's all right. Okay. Folks, if they're interested, can find out for themselves. Who else was born on that day was Valerie Bertinelli.
Oh, wow.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Isn't she terrific?
One day at a time. One of the funniest shows ever made.
Yep. She has a son named Wolf.
She has a son named Wolf. You're
oh,
right
that's
about that.
Wolfgang.
That's right. Oh, shit. Good Lord. All the signs are lining up.
Oh, my God.
We'll have to take care of her and him. Well, okay. There's all the... You can stop playing the mashup of He'll Have to Go and Theme from a Summer Place. That must have been hard to listen to.
You're not thinking that his full name is just Stephen Maynard Clark, are you?
That's bad, but... That's pretty bad.
Okay.
I saw some interview. Somebody was talking about him, and they said, oh, Steve something Clark, he was blah, blah, blah. Whatevers. All right. Yep.
Our profit and loss sheet's just runes. Our balance sheet's just a charm around my neck.
Oh, my. Why would you say that?
Mean nothing.
Amy, I'm worried about you.
It's just got me to thinking this whole episode.
Why does this episode make you question commerce?
Well, it's just the whole, the foundation.
I see.
The foundation of what the... Bonanza and what the Ponderosa sits upon, which I thought was bedrock.
Oh, oh Lord.
Dear. Oh, dear. I might have something that might cheer you up.
Hmm?
Rick, Steve Clark's nickname is the Riffmaster.
I don't even think that's the one I was thinking
Let
of.
Let me tell you, when you Google Steve Clark nickname, there is a full heading that just says in bold, the Riffmaster.
The Riffmaster. Okay, well, that is bad.
Yeah.
That's a bad nickname. Yeah. All right, let's get to some fun facts for this episode.
Woo-hoo!
The Dark Star. This episode was written by a fellow by the name of Anthony Lawrence, who had a long career from Adventures of Ren 10-10 all the way to the Marsha Warfield Show in 1991.
Oh, Marsha Warfield.
Yeah, do you remember her?
Yeah, long face.
I don't know. She was on the Rat Patrol, or rather, he wrote for the Rat Patrol and Medical Center. And this is the first of six episodes of Bonanza. Now, listen to what I found out about this fella. He wrote three episodes coming up later in the show. Each one is a flashback of Ben with one of his wives.
What? How soon do we get to those?
It's going
to
be a little while. Like season four or something like that.
You got to start jumping
Does
in.
Does he have the head of a goat and claws? This writer who could go back into the past.
Well, you're not kidding. This fellow wrote some crazy shit. He wrote that speech that the Romani priestess delivers about the cavern guarded by 9 white dogs. He got real specific.
I haven't heard the word flagon since I was reading Shakespeare as a kid.
Where'd this guy come up with flagon?
Asmodeus. That's the name of a guy who works in my coffee shop.
Oh, no.
Did you say a guy or a god?
A guy. Asmodeus.
But he might be a god. That's another one I meant to Google. Asmodeus, have you heard that word before in your travels?
Let me look it up.
Has it been the devil? Is that Steve Clark's nickname?
Asmodeus directly translates to the Riffmaster.
Oh, goddamn.
How do you spell that?
Hey, your guess is good as mine.
Asmodeus. What is it? Okay.
It's phonetic.
Yeah, just do it.
Prince of demons in Judeo-Islamic lore. One king of the earthly spirits called Ars Geosha, mostly known for the Deuterocanonical Book of Tobit, in which he is the primary antagonist.
And 9 Peter- creamy chihuahuas.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's a bunch of animal heads.
Oh, Asmodeus has animal heads?
I guess.
Shit. I gotta look out for them now. I don't got enough goddamn problems.
Do you guys know of Asmodeus from the Book of Tobit or from Malleus Maleficarum or from the Dictionary Infernal?
Well, it sounds like goddamn Anthony Lawrence was reading at least one of them books.
I bet he's hanging out with Aleister Crowley out in there in JPL Canyon jerking off into the sand.
That's right.
Yep.
I'm sure he was. What a son of a bitch. Well, then, now the beautiful Tirza, the Romani wolf woman in this episode, was played by Susan Harrison, who was famously the ballerina in an episode of The Twilight Zone where it's a bunch of, I'm going to spoil it for you. It's Toy Story, basically. They're toys in a bucket and they don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Oh. She's the ballerina. And she was in A Sweet Smell of Success. Now, this is a true fun fact. When you go looking for fun facts and you find something like this, you say, hey, that's fun. Her daughter was a woman by the name of Darva Conger. That rings a bell for you?
Of course it does.
It does?
Yes.
Tell us who Darva Conger was.
I'm trying to remember. It was a scandal of some kind, right? Like she was a mistress of a politician or something.
What?
And dragged them to her bed for a lunch.
Not that bad.
Cut them into triangle sandwiches.
Yeah, not that bad. Darva Conger was the winning contestant on Who Wants to Marry a Multimillionaire.
That's right.
In February of 2000. She married that strange fella named Rick Rockwell. They found a multimillionaire named Rick Rockwell to put at the center of that show.
What came first, the chicken or the name?
You're here. And then he married Darva Conger.
Holy shit.
Are they still together?
Not even remotely. As a matter of fact, she held a press conference to make clear that she never had sex with that man.
Wow.
And
so she's the daughter of the werewolf gal in this.
Tears of the werewolf gal, which, yep, Darva Conger, Susan Harrison's daughter.
Holy shit. Ben, we're all connected.
We are all connected.
This is a multiverse of madness.
Yep. Zirko, is that his name? Her father, or whatever. I'm not clear that was her father. Was that her father?
Yes.
The main fella.
Okay. Yes.
He was a legendary Czechoslovakian actor who, when the Nazis came, he said, so long, a hard pass on that.
Pozor from Tuskegee Borovki. That means watch out, fantastic blueberries in Czech.
Wow, you got it all.
I do. I just learned that. But I try to learn things in case I ever travel.
And you would say what again?
Posor fantastiki borovki.
What about blueberries?
Watch out.
That'll come in handy.
So if there's a group there called the Fantastic Blueberries and there's like a giant boulder rolling toward them, you're the person they want.
That's like non troppo yakko in Italy.
What's that mean?
Not so much hairspray.
Dobra noc. Good night.
Das ist Nick Deine Hosen.
What?
Das ist Nick Deine Hosen.
These are not my pants?
Exactly. That's German, I believe. Okay. He was, so when he came here, he was, he did a movie called Skeleton on Horseback. I'm going to have to check that one out. Mm. But this here episode of Bonanza is his final television appearance.
Oh, no.
Yes. He traveled back to Europe and died of asthma, which was something you could do in those days. Then you got a fella by the name of Arthur Batanides, who played Spiro, the evil
Romani. Yeah, he was.
He was bad. He has a very famous death in Star Trek, an episode of Star Trek, where some woman who's an energy field says, "I am here for D'Amato," and strikes him dead. He played Mr. Kirkland in Police Academy 2 through 6, excluding 5.
Wait a minute.
Do you know who Mr. Kirkland is in the Police Academy movie?
I just watched all the Police Academy.
Oh, Lord.
And I can't say that I do. Hold on. I got to look it up. Please. Who, Mr. Kirkland?
Kirkland.
Kirkland.
Like the Costco store brand.
Police Academy. But you says from 2 to 6.
Yeah. He's in excluding 5.
Okay, yeah, he had to take a pass on 5 out of quality control.
He said the script is not up to snuff, gentlemen. I'd love to be in the movie, but you got to pass it off to Babalu Mandel. Okay, Carrie Fisher, get a punch up on him.
Mr. Kirkland, huh? Okay, I'm looking.
The bottom's dropped out for me.
Oh,
there's no certainty anymore. If Bonanza and if this isn't sure of how the world works, and there may be another way the world works in an entirely unique way that involves animism, then is this perhaps the worst show in the history of television?
Amen.
Sleeverson.
How dare you? You've gone too far.
Are you possessed? Are you a dark star?
I don't know. I don't even know if I'm speaking right now.
Oh. Wait, let's get Jim Reeves on the phone, or what's his name?
Jim Reeves?
Yeah.
He'll have to go to the devil.
He'll call up and see if there's someone there with you.
Oh, my God. Oh, no. Oh, Lord, what's happening?
She's walking up the stairs on her hind legs, all fours, backwards, and there's not even stairs in the room.
Quick, put a flagon on the fire.
Quick books. Quick books. Quicken.
Oh, no.
Quick books.
Not only is she possessed, but Quicken Loans is buzz marketing our podcast.
No.
I hope you're getting paid well for this.
Down.
Come back to us. Go turn away from us, Manodios and his nine-headed dog.
Put away your book of Tobin.
I've come out.
Oh, praise
Amy.
Jesus.
Amy.
My God.
Thank you for the La Croix.
Oh, that helps. That is refreshing.
Pamplemousse La Croix.
Amy, you were possessed. Oh, here, let me put a little holy La Croix on your forehead.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't know what.
You're all right. We're gonna get to it. Our goal by the end of this episode is to bring Amy back around. Look, the better part of faith is doubt, is it not? Without doubt, how can there be faith?
Lie down.
Yeah. Well, we're going to bring you back.
Okay. I'm fine now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you feel all right?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
I'm okay.
Well, I don't think you were there for what we saw, but...
Yeah. You took your leave of us for a little while there, and it was disturbing.
Really?
Yeah. Well, holy crap. We'll play you back, because we're recording, right?
Yeah, sure.
Unless it's stuck to the tape.
You know how a vampire can't show up in a mirror, maybe a demon don't show up on audio or something. I hope not. But listen, I found out who Mr. Kirkland is, and he is memorable as hell.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's Tackleberry ends up loving this other cadet, and her whole family fights each other with their fists, and he's the dad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. Yeah. Tackleberry. Mm-hmm. Well, so... okay. Good to have you back, Amy.
Yeah, very good to have you.
I was worried about you.
Oh, no. I don't know what I said during that time, yeah. But just know that I am right. I'm back in business.
So were you gone this whole episode or just that time?
What?
Well, it was mostly an ad for Quicken Loans, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Well,
hope we see
they have a great interest rate, especially if you want a jumbo.
Yeah, that's right. And out here in California, you have to.
And all there is jumbo.
That's it.
I don't even know what that is, goddammit. I don't believe in buying property.
I believe in taking it.
Hell yes. Put up a fence. That's yours.
Eminent domain.
Yep. Well, all right. Last thing I want to tell you is that Grandin Rhodes, who played the doctor in this episode, this is his first of 26 times playing Dr. J.P. Martin on Bonanza, wow. Except for one time when he played Dr. Rob Kiefer. I think they must have just forgot his name. All right. Well, let's get into it. You guys ready to talk about this episode?
Sure am.
Dark Star.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Man, okay, it starts with an exterior shot of the Ponderosa. Then we cut to some Mutual of Omaha footage of a wolf who's just kind of meandering around in the woods. And then we see Joe and Hawes, and they're looking for this wolf. They're looking for timber wolf. And they split up, and Joe discovers...
For wolf meat.
Are they going to cook up some wolf meat?
Right?
Oh, that's a good question. I thought maybe they was killing deer or something.
I think the wolf is terrorizing the Ponderosa.
I have a new product. Oh. It's a vegan jerky, but it is wolf meat. It's to flavor wolf meat, but it's also called the Body of Christ with no guilt.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So
you could kill a wolf and eat it.
I want to know how wolf meat is vegan meat, or is it just flavored
like wolf meat? So can't tell the difference. Can't tell the difference. But it's also the body of Christ, the bread of heaven, and so but it tastes like real wolf meat, and it works on so many levels. As a Christian, sometimes you get kind of detached from you have a wafer and you go, well, that didn't have a lot of crunch to it, even though it's Jesus. It's jerky, sure. Jesus.
You should not be disappointed in the taste of Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And so we've come up with something that has a umami taste.
Oh, I've heard of that before. Yeah. It's like a fish sauce or something, fish powder.
It's a certain type of taste bud region on your tongue that we were never taught in school, but now seems to be factored. That's just regular, always there.
If you eat Christ, don't you want the experience to feel like, I think I'm going to have another one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nobody can eat just one Jesus.
Yeah. You don't want to eat Christ and say, no, thank you. I don't give a care
that'll
if I try that
me.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeah, you clear your plate. I mean, you want to clear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'll buy a case of umami Jesus. You bet you I will. Well, okay, but Joe discovers a woman, and she has been sleeping out in the woods, but she somehow out there is able to get real made up. Her face, the makeup on that face is like you hadn't seen that.
Very thick.
Very thick, and it's particularly the lip gloss that got to me. Yeah.
It's almost, it's genuinely offensive blackface.
It really is. It's not even that the makeup is that dark. It's just how starkly it fades from makeup to regular skin color around the ears and neck and eyes.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't look that careful.
I did.
Huh. Well, maybe that's just the way the Romani people were.
It must have been.
Lighter colored ears and necks, perhaps. But they call her what they call her. And Haas says he ain't never seen one of them up close before. And then we go to the opening credits. What happened to her? Is she out cold? Oh, yeah. She runs away and she falls down and then she does a big log roll down a hill. And it looks like a lot of fun, except that she then, I guess, strikes her head on a rock or something.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Or has a stroke, a mini stroke.
Maybe it's a stroke.
Because we didn't see her eyes before she opened them, it could have been, they could have been going all over the place.
Oh, it could have been a stroke. Yep, because it is hard to understand what else would explain that fall.
They should have put a wallet in her mouth.
Yeah, goddammit. Come on, Hollis. Well, so now we end up at the Ponderosa, and Doc Morgan is in there, and he's looking at this girl, and then he comes out, and then he, for the benefit of the audience, explains what it is that we're looking at here. And he's, this right here is, seems like, well, I don't know what to say about it. I'm just going to play it. This is Doc Morgan explaining this lady.
Gypsy girl.
Well, we were aware of that, Doctor. Is she going to be all right?
Can't hurt a gypsy. They're built to endure.
Oh, I don't know, God. Doc. She looked like she was pretty well shook up to me.
Oh, she'll come out of it all right. Just give her a day in bed and then send her on her way.
Yeah, well, where's that?
Wherever her people are.
Well, we don't exactly know where her people are, Doctor.
Oh. Well, soon she's on her feet, you'd best turn her over to the sheriff in Virginia City.
Oh, what for? She didn't do anything.
She will, boy. She will. Just give her a chance.
Whoa.
She's a gypsy, isn't she?
Oh.
Is that as bad as being an Indian?
Sometimes it's worse.
Holy moly.
Just when you think Bonanza is turning the corner.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. This is where I really started to have feelings coming up because I was, my husband says, he'll say, can you move that rock from one part of the yard to the other part of the yard? And I say, well, it's a little heavy, honey. Maybe we could get a dolly. And he says, you got the hips for it.
Now, oh, I see. So that he sounds like Dr. Morgan in that situation.
Oh, saying, you can take it.
Oh, you can take it.
Oh, wow.
He feels you're built to endure.
Is he doing that endure. For a reason or just to have?
Well, it takes away my humanity to say, oh, somehow I could make. Sometimes he leaves me at church because he knows I'll make my way home.
Oh, wow. But that's a compliment. I don't understand how you don't feel complimented by
it's
that.
6 miles over hill country.
But you do you the know the it? Way?
Well, yes, of
see
course.
See that?
Well.
And you made it home, didn't you?
But I'd rather have a ride in the Saturn.
Well, sure you would, of course. But it's character building to have to walk home,
those
I think.
Saturns are nice. They got plastic bodies.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he walk out?
Oh, well, I guess he, well, that's a good question. Well, you know, maybe he's admitting to you that he's got a frailty. He can't do it, but you can.
Yeah.
See that?
So it's a compliment to say I can take it and I'm unkillable?
Yeah, of course it is.
You are unkillable.
Hey, it's Simpson. A compliment.
Almost like a hardy insect.
Very much. Yeah.
Like a cockroach.
You can't. Yeah, doesn't he say you can't kill
that's
a
what
gypsy?
He says sometimes. He says, oh, you skittle around when I turn the light on. I know even if I smushed you on one side, you'd grow it back. And he says it's affectionate.
See, that's beautiful. He has a lot of respect for you, Amy. And here you are acting all insulted.
You ought to go home and do him a service for being so sweet.
Yeah, kiss his leg. You know, you can cut off a cockroach's head and he'll live on for another month or two.
Is that true?
Maybe. Well, now, it sounds like maybe Dr. Morgan's gone too far and he's saying some inaccurate and rude things about these Roma's peoples. But sure enough, Joe goes in there to try to put a blanket on her and she literally bites his hand.
That's true. She does.
Well, but I've been surprised, you know, by a nurse. And you just say to yourself, you know, when you're not feeling well, I mean, that's the best way to handle a healthcare worker sometimes, because they're busy. They're so overworked right now. So you just nip at them. You just give a little nip so they know, you know, I don't need help right now.
Okay. I didn't think of it that way, but that does make a certain kind of sense.
Sure, sure.
You're a nurse. Yeah, you got all these patients on the floor, and you're trying to tuck them in and get you change their bedpan.
My OBGYN, he went too far with the speculum, and I took a chunk.
Really, you bit him?
I bit him.
Do they ever? I guess they probably put some kind of restraint on you now.
Well, no. Well, that's what my husband said, but I said, that's not what it's like. It's a wonderful. Because women are put first, I did bite his leg and it developed impotigo.
OBGYN
as he was leaving because I couldn't reach because I was caught up in the stirrups.
Oh my. Okay, so this was after the incident. It was sort of very vengeful.
It was a vengeful bite.
Premeditated.
Yeah, it had a forethought. Well, he's a doctor. He'll be fine. You can't kill a doctor. They're built indoor.
Yeah.
Well, now Joe sees old Tirza. That's her name, this woman. And we did see a wolf. She howled when the wolf howled or something like
right,
that.
So right.
We got it in the back of our minds. What's going on? And he goes and talks to her outside. She's wandering around and she starts talking in poems or something. She says, "Night is the inside of a black bell. It rings forth the spirits of the dead." And she says, "I'm past being grown up. I'm old and withered. I am dead." And then she says, "Go away before I turn you into a toad."
She was just late for an open mic.
Oh, yeah. She's the riff master.
They were doing the poetry open mic and she couldn't get there in time because she couldn't get a ride from her family.
Yeah. Well, right. Her family has shunned her. But she tells Joe, by the way, the words "go away" about 100 times.
Yeah. First. Go away.
Go away. She just says it again and again, but he doesn't. Good for him.
He loves her. Intends to marry.
Evidently. Well, so now, Paul tries to charm her. He treats her like a child, right. Like a wayward child. And he's a very, very patient.
Yeah.
Very, very charming. And everybody keeps asking her, "Where are your people? Where are your people?" And she says, "Well, there is no one in front of me and no one in back." That's her answer to that question. And then she does that magician's tablecloth trick, but without the trick part, so that dishes and whatnot go scattering all over the place. She gets mad and she runs away. And she runs through a storm of chickens screaming, and then she screams at some horses and runs away. And little Joe catches up to her, and she says again, "Go away." And he says, "I'm not going anywhere till I find out what's going on in that crazy head of yours." He's invested in her.
Yeah, he is.
Because she's beautiful. Ben Cartwright admits, she says she's a witch. That's what. And then Ben Cartwright says, "I've always found women a mite harder to understand than men. They're more sensitive." Ben Cartwright admits that.
Well, it's because he doesn't see them as full human beings, so he's confused.
Oh, is that why? I think it's because he ennobles them to be less than full human beings. It's a compliment. It's
this is a very complimentary toward women episode.
Yes, it really is. Both
in Bonanza and this podcast.
Yeah.
Women
yeah.
are the main message is, well, this woman, she needs help. Maybe she was doing the right thing by becoming a wolf and hanging out in the woods. She seemed to be doing okay. She was just taking a nap.
She did, yeah. She wasn't bothering anybody. That's for sure.
Wait, are you defending this wolf woman?
Well, now, I'm not clear. We're going to have to figure it out by the end of this episode. Yeah, is she actually a wolf either. Woman or what? Because it was, because she seemed crazy. Now, what happens is, I guess they see a covered wagons coming through. They see it right from the ranch house. And here they are. This must be her people. Let's go and talk to them. And go over there, and that's where we meet old Zerka. And he's old. Boy, I tell you, here's what we learn about these folks, these Roma people. Number one, they is thieves. And that's just an objective fact. We see them steal stuff in this episode. It's a fact.
Right.
But then, wasn't the Ponderosans stolen?
But what? What do you mean?
How so?
Who stole what from who?
From the native peoples, the aboriginal people of the northern hemisphere.
Well, unless their deed is on file at the county assayer's office in Virginia City, I don't know that they owned anything.
What about compassion?
It's just a lot of paperwork, much like when you're going to do your polyamorous relationship. Well,
there you go.
Notarized and such.
I just don't know. It doesn't seem right.
Oh, well, like I'm saying, they put up a fence around the property, and that's theirs, everything within that fence.
Paved paradise and made a parking lot.
Here, here.
So, it's okay.
This episode has made me really question everything.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. Well, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Question anything. And another thing about these Roman peoples is that they are charming. They'll charm the socks right off of you. You can't get a straight answer out of them.
Isn't that a good description of Pa?
You saying he's part Romani?
No, I'm saying that, are we not our brother's keeper? Are we not the exact same? We're all the village. There is no other. We are all a part of the world. The only way that they had to trick them was because he would not share.
As long as there's paperwork, I think.
Was
the pig Pa's? I don't know.
Yeah, the pig belonged to Ben Cartwright. Yeah. That's an expensive pig.
Yeah.
But the thing that he's charming about here is hey, how'd you get through our fence line? And Zerka says, well, fences are always coming down, with a little twinkle in his eye. He's sort of to say, well, you know, I cut down your fence and did whatever I want. How are you going to prove otherwise?
Because there is no property. There's just humankind.
Well, there's paperwork.
Sure. And then, as I say, the county assayer's office down there. Well, anyway, old Ben is trying to say, hey, we've got your wolf girl, and we'd like to give her back to you and end this entire affair early. This episode will end after 15 minutes. But Zirko says, nope, she is a dog. She is a bringer of misfortune. And there's a great number of cutaways to a fellow by the name of Spiro, who every time they cut to him, he's making just the same face every time.
They're using the same footage each time.
You might almost suspect. Well, and so it turns out, let's see here. Ben says, this was funny. Ben says, hey, you can stay here on the Ponderosa on one condition, that you will take the girl with you when you go. And Zerka says, I promise we will go.
Take only daughters, leave only memories.
Take only daughters.
Well, that's beautiful.
Beautiful, you don't want to leave your trash at your campsite.
Oh, is that what they say at a campsite? Is there a sign up that says, take only daughters, leave only memories?
Well, take photos, leave only memories.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, okay. But it's implied that if you came there with your daughter, you should take her too. But they might want to specify it on the sign.
In this day, you could litter no problem. In fact, even back when this episode was out, litter no problem.
Oh, people didn't mind littering.
Not at all.
Because then it was nice stuff.
Right.
Iron axe handles.
Right. You bet. And rubber axe handles to hit somebody over the head with in a stable. Well, Spiro, what happens here? It's All Hallows Eve, it happens to be, and they intend to roast a pig, and so they need a Ben to bring a pig and all kind of stuff. And Ben says, well, I'm not going to bring a pig. And then this guy tries to sell him a bunch of crappy horses that he spiffed up to look better. Boy, these Romanis are sure a bunch of con people.
Gelded, just like the brothers of Pop Gelded.
Oh, Gelded is a
eunuch. Horse eunuchs.
Horse eunuchs, which are just, they have not, they don't have the mojo. I've just realized this after watching this past episode that they don't have it in them to consummate any relationship.
So you really think the Cartwright boys have been castrated?
Have you looked in their pant area?
Yes.
I can't say that I have. What do you see when you look into the pant area?
I'm seeing what I may be just aspirational bulges on my end. Maybe it's
stuffings.
Not there. Stuffings?
Stuffings like the horse.
Oh.
They stuffed their hooves to make them look more valuable, but it's just cotton.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Look. I believe soon enough there will be an episode of this show where we see one or all of their penises.
Well, we know there will, because in that fan fiction.
Oh, that's Adam true. We did read some fan fiction in which Adam engaged in a gunfight with no pants on.
He had full shirt on, but no
pants.
He
had a shirt, but no pants, and everybody in town saw his Johnson. That was, now I don't know if that's canon, as they say.
Oh, his is a canon.
Oh, goddamn.
Hello.
Hot damn.
I only go with the scripture.
Yep.
The text, yeah.
Well, then we have a scene between Joe and Tirza by a phony pond, and she's digging for wild artichokes and finds them, no problem. And then Spiro peeks in on them, and they have a little bit of a fight. He brings a knife to a gunfight, old Spiro does, and Joe beats him, right? But and he keeps calling Joe Gaio. Hey, Gaio.
Yeah.
And Tirza calls Ben Barrison. I wonder if that's authentic. And then he threatens to kill Joe. He says, next time you see me, I'm going to kill you. Okay. And then we see somebody stealing a pig, and we know who it is. And now we got, there's a scene where Adam is only, it pops along, and I don't know what he's there for.
Not much.
Then we got, okay. They realize a pig has been stolen. Pa and Joe and Hoss all go to the pig roast there with the Romanis for their All Hallows Eve celebration. And the point is they're going to get this man to pay for the goddamn pig. And there's a whole, let's see if he can talk his way out of this one.
But has it not already been paid for?
How so? No, they stole the pig from the Ponderosa.
But they... Ponderosa was stolen.
Okay, because there's paperwork. Because if you go to the registrar recorder, very clear. County, all you got to do is
draw the property
there
line.
There were actual agreements with the native peoples.
This is a seal agreement.
That the Ponderosa was given to.
You know it was legitimate.
Not only that, but Ben speaks Paiute language.
Yeah. So
okay. Then we're done. Zerka says, hey, I don't have enough money to buy that pig from you. I don't have enough dollars, but here is a silver bowl. And Ben says, well, this is worth way more than the pig. And I kept waiting for the moment when he realized it's plastic or something.
Right.
But that never came.
No.
So I think maybe Zerka really did give him a very, very expensive silver bowl in exchange for a pig.
Yeah, so it wasn't stolen.
It wasn't stolen. Of course, it looked like it was made of aluminum to me, but it never was discovered to be. So that was interesting. And then Tirza shows up and does a dance. I looked to see if there was any evidence that Susan Harrison was any kind of a trained dancer. No, she's not.
Even though she's a ballerina in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, exactly.
And the mother of Darva Conger, which would tell you she's a dancer.
You would think. But they didn't. This is one of those times, like the Spanish dance. Remember the Spanish woman that did the dance? Where they just didn't hire a choreographer.
No.
They just kind of
swing.
Yeah.
Oh, they didn't hire anyone that would get you authenticity in dancing, culture, history, or any such. Milk and blood of an unborn calf.
Yeah.
I'm still curious about that.
Uh-huh.
That sounds actually fairly accurate, just
does
because blood, I know blood can be a wonderful, and it's a wonderful thing that people drink nowadays as soups.
Oh, and blood and soup?
Yeah.
Well, evidently, the blood of an unborn calf is a particularly clean or disinfected or something. It's good stuff for you. But I don't know how they would have got their hands on it in those days. How do you get the blood of an unborn calf? Sounds hard.
I'll kill a pregnant sow.
Oh, I see.
I don't know what exactly to Google in this sense, but I'm not getting anything for what I did Google.
Okay, all right. So now there's a whole conversation about, hey, okay, you guys seem to have shunned your wolf girl, and she seems to feel that she no longer belongs to you people, and so we're stuck with her on the goddamn Ponderosa, and we don't want her because she's crazy and she bit my son. And so what's going on? And they say, well, her mother died in childbirth, and that told us that she was a witch. Oh, and ever since then, she's just brought us nothing but trouble. And sure enough, her crazy dance causes a lightning special effect.
Dark star.
Could it be that the way they treated her as an unwanted child has caused her to develop some kind of psychosis or...
No, because there's paperwork.
Yeah, you just got to run through the paperwork.
It's not a big deal.
The county of Sayers office, she is a witch.
Because sometimes people can get a dissociative personality disorder because of trauma, of being rejected or or neglected by their family.
You ever hear of Occam's razor, it's called? What's the likeliest explanation? All this business you're talking about, trauma, whatever, or she's a goddamn witch.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know what I mean? You just have to ask yourself what's more likely to be true.
Yeah, my understanding of Occam's razor is it works like this. It's not what's most obvious. It's just what's the less time I have to take to understand it.
There you go. Yeah, right. Yeah. What feels right?
Yeah.
Look it up. She's a witch. She's a witch. Now, Ben explains to old Zerka here, he says, he quotes Shakespeare and he cues it up as, there's a man, maybe you've never heard of him. And then he quotes Shakespeare. And I'm going to do that from now on anytime I quote Shakespeare.
Who?
I don't do it very often, but if I ever do, like, wasn't it Shakespeare that said, you must buy your wife at least as much jewelry as you buy your horse? When I say that, there's a man, maybe you never heard of him.
I never have.
Well, anyways, it's a good way to just tell somebody right off the bat, I'm pretty sure you're a dummy.
And what did Shakespeare say again?
The fault, dear Brutus, is in the stars, not ourselves.
Okay, yeah.
In ourselves. No, not in the stars.
Oh, it's in ourselves, not in our stars.
Stars, yeah.
Maybe you guys have never heard of William Shakespeare. I don't know.
I think Ben was trying to make the point you was just trying to make, where he's trying to say, hey, it's not a star that made your daughter crazy. It was you.
Yes.
I think so. Ben are on the same page there. I think so.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know neither. I'm not sure. Well, Joe and Terza have a little scene there. He catches up to her again. Once again, she runs away, and he runs after her, and he finds her, and he says, you run faster than any buck deer I ever saw. Yeah. That's just like them. And then he says, she talks about, I wrote down some quotes, we eat up living souls like grain. Oh. You are a tree. I see you as a tree.
She ain't been getting in this, like,
Men are trees. Women are fish.
Yeah, that's right. She's a fish. He's a tree. And then he says, now you listen to me. I don't want you talking like that anymore. And then, this is the most romantical scene I've ever seen on this show.
He told her to shut up.
Yeah, shut up. I'm going to kiss you. And he kisses her and she says, hold me. Hold me. It's beautiful.
And if he was a eunuch, why would he be compelled to kiss her and chase her?
Oh, yeah. It doesn't mean that he can't express himself sensually, but he cannot penetrate her.
He can't.
I don't think any of those, the boys can.
Could she penetrate him?
Well, certainly, yes. Yes, of course.
Okay, well, then we're fine.
Yeah, they'll work it out. Yeah, they'll be all right.
Well, once they put their thumbprints down, then you know what you're working with.
Right, here you go.
You can kiss her leg. We're fine.
Sure.
We're fine.
This is disturbing. Last week we had that incel fellow trying to tell us the Cartwright boys are incels. Yeah. Now you're thinking they're eunuchs. I mean, they've just got to prove us wrong and get a woman in bed right away, goddammit.
I would love it if the next episode, instead of the four of them riding up on their horses. It's the same mountain range, but it's just four dicks in the foreground.
Here, here.
And with little cowboy hats.
You know, on the dicks themselves. Yeah. That Don with a rubber band.
The dicks?
Yeah, I think so.
Because they've been castrated.
No. Oh. I'm saying the cowboy hat. How do you get a cowboy hat to stay on a dick?
I'll tell you.
All right. Yeah. Spiro watches them, and he could have killed him, but he doesn't. And because he comes up with another plan, he hears that wolf and he goes, I got a better plan than murder.
Would Doss have a 10-ounce hat on his dick?
Yeah, Hoss would have a hostile hat on his dick. Of course he would. Kind of question is that? Well, now, here's what happens. We see a blood and feathers and hoof trail leading to the bed that beautiful Tears is sleeping in, and it's got human handprints on the bed. So this was very elaborately thought out. Yeah. It's wolf paws right up until the bed, and then the wolf paws turn into hands, but they're still covered in blood. And then he did all that, Spiro did, we later learned, and he put blood, chicken blood, on Tears' hand. This woman is a heavy sleeper, is what I'm saying. I feel like I might have woke up at some point in that process of somebody putting blood on my hands.
It's kind of like how you just did, Amy.
What?
When you went away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's called I think dissociation, where you leave your body you black out and you can't remember. Well, I've had that happen a lot when I eat chicken.
Oh, really?
We got a bucket of Kentucky Fried. I didn't wake up till the next week.
No, I've heard of that. Chicken blackout. That's not uncommon. But all right, so now, goddamn Tirza, she's sure she's transforming into a wolf. She's thought it all this time. Now she knows it's true, and she runs to her father, and she says, oh, please, cure me of my wolfism and my witchism. And he says, it ain't going to be easy. It's going to be physical agony to a degree that it will drive you mentally mad, he says.
But she was all already feeling terrible. It's kind of like you go to the doctor and you just say, well, I'm out of ideas. I had psoriasis, and I still do because it's incurable.
Psoriasis?
Yes. And it gets worse with stress. But I went to the doctor and I said, hey, can you do something? And he said, well, not really, but there is a way to ameliorate the effects.
Oh, and what's that?
Well, it's creams.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. You didn't bite him, did you? You had no reason to.
I thought about it.
I'm glad you didn't, because you know I think doctors talk to each other. They say, see that patient. Yeah. She'll bite you.
That's like how Uber drivers look at your star rating just as much as you look at theirs.
Oh man, yeah. That's why I had to steal that horse. Yeah. Anyways, okay, here we go. Now we got to Joe. Joe sees the feathers himself, and so he goes after her, and he arrives at the Romani people's camp, and there's Spiro, and he's got a whip, and he says, har, 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 you can't save her now. They're going to tie her to the ground and rip her open. And then it's whip versus gun, and whip is winning out. Is this the best fight ever? Is this the best fight?
It was very good.
Nice,
it
long
was
too.
Good. Yeah, very it was long. And what else got in there? It was like a stable fight in that things just get pulled out of the environment into the fight. And at some point, Spiro pulled a spare wagon wheel off the side of a wagon and that got involved. And I don't remember how it ended.
He tackled him.
Well, Spiro changed the position of which he was holding on to that knife. And it was a strategic error because he made it very easy for Joe to stab Spiro with his own knife.
Yeah.
Joe is very little.
Very little. By the way, at some point, his love says to him, why do they call you Little Joe? And he says, it's just a nickname. It doesn't mean anything.
Oh, and we know it means something. Oh, no. All there is a nub.
Oh, you're right. Oh, Amy, I hate to say the evidence.
I know.
Is soundly piling up in your corner.
Oh, God, it can't be true. Well, okay, now what happens? Now we get to Joe goes tracking. He goes to track his love and finds her. She is being staked to the ground. He is being held back by two of these big fellas. She's staked to the ground. Crazy old witch lady
or someone who's having a reaction from ongoing neglect and trauma as a child.
Who's finally having the
community come together and notarized. Give her the attention that she deserves.
She put her thumbprint in a book, and it's the witch book, and that's what she is.
That they roll off in a mimeograph.
Precisely. You can look it up at the library. Yep. Well, then this old lady begins a ceremony that involves a blue liquid in a flagon that you put on the fire, and in there is Ozymandias, and he's going to explode. And when he explodes down the cavernous hallway with the nine white dogs, at this point, he's a man-eating emperor, by the way.
He's big.
Real big.
This does feel like the author of this episode was into things that he wanted to force into a Western. Like, he didn't want to write about cowboys.
Yeah. He's like, I need people to understand the power of Ozymandias.
Nobody's letting me write my ancient Romani mythology.
It takes 2 months of darkness to arrive at Ozymandias' castle.
But maybe this writer was a prophet hailing a new message, a new gift to the world.
False idols, Amy.
I just wonder.
You have an open mind, and it's a virtue, but it's got to be stamped out. Well, So sure enough, they heat up a horseshoe. They're going to brand her with a horseshoe.
That'll do it.
Yeah. Did you see that? They heat up a horseshoe and they're about to stick it into her. Looks like they're aiming for her breasts. And then the flagon explodes on the fire, and not a moment too soon. Her father's predictions as to how maddeningly agonizing this was going to be was completely wrong.
That's, yeah.
Because the flagon blew up and Asmandios is gone.
It was as fast as anything. It was like getting your teeth looked at. It's as soon as you just worry about it, it's over.
Yeah, that's right. So that's it. Now we go to Joe and Tirza. Tirza's in bed. She's sleeping off her wild night of being tied to the ground. And I mean, I couldn't believe it. This was the biggest moment on the show ever. Joe comes out and talks to Pa. He says, Pa, you know, you told me when I was ready, I could have a parcel of land here at the Ponderosa. Now's the time. And Pa's very happy to hear it because this means he's going to marry Tirza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's madly in love.
Though he has never asked Tirza what she wants.
No, not one time.
That's part of the process. Romantic, yeah. But also it doesn't put into effect that she has civil rights and a power over her own body and mind.
Right. It makes it clear that she doesn't. So he asks his own father for this girl's hand in marriage. In a slight departure, but Ben Cartwright says, I'm proud of you. Let's do it. And so, but just at that moment, like right on time, in walks Zirka. And Zirka says, now that she's no longer a wolf girl, she's coming with us. We're happy to have her back since the flagon exploded in the fire. And Joe says, no, I'm going to marry her. She's staying here. And Zirka says, well, according to our tradition, you can marry her, but that means you are coming with us and you're going to live as a Romani man.
Which would be a real twist.
And Joe says, what? So he's got a choice to make.
Yeah. Yes.
Big choice.
He could have gone with his love and lived out the rest of his life.
With his beloved, this woman he loved so much. I mean, he was crazy about her. We really saw that relationship develop through thought, emotion, words. So much that they shared.
And yes, he could have easily had a spinoff show.
It would have been wonderful. Little Joe and the Romanis.
It probably wouldn't have been called that.
They wouldn't have called
exactly,
it that. But yeah, it would have been. That would have been a hell of a show. But instead, well, she tells him, you're a tree. You know, you need to stay here and be a tree. And he accepts that and watches her go.
And now I'm not a fish, but an evil fish. I didn't ever think about fish being evil and angry.
Oh, yeah.
Fish. Until she mentioned it.
Oh, evil fish. Yeah. Awesome. Don't go near a fish. Well, so there you go. So she, to recap this episode, she was a witch. She killed her mother in childbirth, after which point she was a witch that sometimes turned into a wolf. And Joe fell in love with that for some goddamn reason. And then,
because she bewitched him.
She bewitched him. I guess that's why. It was either fall in love with her or turn into a toad. And then she got the witch taken out of her by a flagon on the fire. And then she was able to go on with her people. And he had the choice to stay or be with her. And he said no.
Could it not be that Joe wasn't bewitched, but he had obsessed about her as if she were an object because of his detachment that he had. He doesn't have attachment with his mother because she died. And with women generally, he doesn't see them as legitimate partners, but as fantasies.
So that when he doesn't want to,
he has a sexual anorexia where he in fact is, you know, he draws, longs for this connection, but draws back as soon as there's any possibility of it being real.
Oh, well, Amy, I don't know what to make of you today. I can't tell if you've regressed or progressed here, and I am worried. I know that.
Yeah, and as far as you're thinking that he only sees her as an object or whatever, I remind you that she said go away like 10 times, and he didn't. Right? He must love her.
Yeah.
He must. And so I think he truly was prepared to build a life with this beautiful, strange, poetic speaking woman.
No means I love you from the other person.
Yes.
Oh, I guess I just, I don't know what's happening. If I need an exorcism, but you I just might. Feel like I'm changing and I may become a wolf.
Oh, no. I didn't see that coming. I beg you don't become a wolf. Please, to God, don't do it. I'd be terrified.
I enjoyed part of the idea of animism and that when, you know, we are the animals. Like, that just seems really exciting because otherwise it's just, I mean, Christianity has been just so... It's just a drag, you guys.
What in the world is happening?
It's a drag. What? It's every Sunday, and there's a lot of chores. I gotta bring in potluck dishes, and it's gotta be a new one every time.
People
say, "Oh, didn't you do the hot dogs and spinach last time?"
Amy Sleverson, I beg of you. Feel what you feel, but give it a little time. Take till the next episode before you proclaim anything, because this is all on record.
Okay. Oh, yes, people are going to hear this.
Oh, I know.
People in your church community might hear it.
But I think this is when you need the support of your community, is when you are at your lowest.
Well, we can't.
I have inventory of product lines that is 15 to 35 years old that fill up my garage. I thought I was led by God, but am I just a hoarder?
No. Folks, get out, get on to Lodge Daughters. It's urgent.
Yeah.
I beg you, please buy some of this merchandise. You are saving Amy Sleverson's soul if you do. That's what's on the line.
And if you, like us, are part of her community, do not help her by acknowledging this truth of hers, because you will only be hurting her.
You'll only be hurting her. Poor Amy Sleverson. And you know what? Would it kill you to bring something other than the hot dog and spinach? For Christ's sakes, I mean, you can do a little effort here, too.
I only still have so much emotional energy.
Oh, come on. I brought an ambrosia. I brought a casserole. I brought a potatoes au gratin.
How hard is it to make a ziti? Put a little, just melt some goddamn cheese over penne pasta. That's all it is.
I guess I could do the ground beef and cheese.
Now,
and,
there we go.
And a tater tot again.
There we go. That's the Amy Sleverson.
You can open up a jar of store-bought sauce. Nobody will know the
difference.
Can
boil up V8 and just call it tomato soup.
Absolutely. Oh boy. And, you know, it's not like it's easy to be a Romani person either. They got to find a pig to steal every Halloween.
Yeah.
Pain in the ass. Everybody's got it hard. Yeah.
Well, everybody, and it's uncertain of whether it's really stealing. You know, that's the thing in this episode is you can't tell who is the righteous. Who is in fact the wronged.
Oh, boy. I'd try to come over there and hug you. I'm afraid you'd bite me.
Yep. Well, I don't know.
That's true. I don't trust myself.
Let's check in with you next week and see if you still feel this way. Excuse me, I almost fell.
Yeah. We'll see if that pilot and what the other guy did can talk you down.
Oh, yeah.
The arugula farmer.
It just could be perimenopause.
Okay. Well, that would be good. Off air, I'm going to find out what sexual anorexia is, but folks, I won't ask you to sit through that. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's another episode of Bananas for Bananas.
You should read about sexual bulimia. That's even more interesting.
I'm sure it is.
Binging and purging.
Binging and purging sex.
This may be the biggest cliffhanger we've ever done, because I am agog to find out what will become of Amy Sleverson next week and which version of her we will experience.
Me too. But I will have a flag and a blue liquid ready.
Yeah.
Either way.
Please do.
Hey, after this, we only have 400 episodes of Bonanza left to go.
My God.
So you just got to have faith, I guess.
I guess so.
You've only got 400 episodes to figure this out, Amy.
Well, and that's what community's all about, is being there for each other and be a witness to others' experience, you know, even if it's uncomfortable.
I guess so, but I'm going to leave.
Me too. I got to
go.
I got an appointment with the Anywhere But Here Club.
How about me too? I'm the treasurer. All right, folks. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye now.
Bananas for Bonanza is brought to you by Andy Daly, with Maria Bamford and Matt Gourley. Theme song by Matt Gourley, with The Journeyman, which in this case are Mark McConville, Daniel Michikoff, and Wade Ryan. Bananas for Bonanza is mixed and edited by Brett Morris, and executive produced by Andy Daly, Matt Gourley, Brett Morris, and Little Scott Ackerman. We'll see you next time.